Well, we turn to the other side of another river, that is the Tiber, and welcome very, very warmly His Eminence Cardinal Turon, who, as I say, is representing the Holy See at this conference. It's been a great pleasure and privilege to work with His Eminence in many contexts in recent years, and we're delighted, Your Eminence, that you're willing to be with us today.
If you allow me, dear friends, by sending me to you, Pope Benedict XVI manifests his deep interest in this conference. And having had the privilege of being member of the papal suite during his pilgrimage to the Holy Land in May 2009, I can remember the impact of his farewell speech at Tel Aviv Airport, when he pleaded for a lasting peace which can only rest on justice, genuine reconciliation, and healing. But he did not hesitate also to state that one of the saddest sights of his pilgrimage was the wall. Everybody here is convinced, I am sure, that if a wall can protect, it also divides. It makes suspicion and ignorance grow. So it is important that Christians, who are the disciples of the one who broke down the barrier of hostility, to quote St. Paul, should be in a condition to freely contribute to harmony and dialogue in the Israeli and Palestinian context societies. But unfortunately, we have to recognize that the situation of Christians in the Holy Land, like in other Middle East countries, is marked by precariousness. We must remember that the political evolution of the last 50 years have made fragile the presence and the leadership of Christians. Revolutions and wars have contributed to weaken the Christian communities and favored the immigration of many families. What we have to avoid is that the Holy Land become an archaeological and historical site to be visited, like the Colosseum in Rome. For us, Christians, the Holy Land is the land of God's revelation, the place where Jesus lived, died, and was resurrected. We cannot even think that Bethlehem or the Holy Sepulchre become museums with entrance tickets and guides who explain beautiful legends. For us, the holy places, the shrines, are much more than stones. They are living testimonies which have around them a population, families with their schools, their cultural patrimony, their languages, their folklore, their artisans, handicrafts, hospitals, and so on. We have been repeating for years that we are a Christian minority in the Holy Land and in the Arab world. And I share the view of the speakers of yesterday who said that it's enough to repeat such an evidence. We are a minority, but a minority which matters. I think of our schools, universities, hospitals, which welcome everybody, regardless of his or her religion. I am convinced that time has come to reflect on the place and on the mission of Christian communities in the Holy Land and in the Middle East. First of all, our Christian brothers and sisters of that part of the world have to realize that they have a certain peculiarity. I should say a dignity. They are all belonging to apostolic churches. Missionaries from Rome or Constantinople did not bring the Christian message there. Those communities have been built on the faith of the apostles. They are apostolic communities in the deepest sense of the word. Their practice comes through the faith of the apostles. And this is their identity. Their liturgical patrimony is of an exceptional value. Let us mention, by the way, that in many Oriental churches, the Eucharistic prayer is said in the language spoken by Jesus. But it is important not to make of this rich heritage something we keep in a safe. There is a tendency, a dangerous tendency, to transform our Christian communities into cultural communities. Secondly, Christians in the Holy Land and in the Middle East are Arabs. They have been in that part of the world much before the Muslims. They are not asking asylum. They are rather at home. Our Christian brothers and sisters speak Arabic, and for example, many Christians have contributed to the rebirth of Arabic literature at the end of the 19th century. And I remember when I was serving in the nunciature in Lebanon, in Beirut, at the time of the civil war between 1979 and 1983, despite the bombing of the Christian part of Beirut, the Pauline fathers continue to bring the Quran in Arabic language. Arab Christians are a gift to societies because they bring cultural openness, a sense of the dignity of the human person, and particularly of women, a conception of freedom which harmonizes rights and duties, and a conception of political society which can lead to democracy. So Christians have the vocation to be a bridge. Then the question is not how the Christians are going to survive in the Holy Land and the Middle East, but how they are ready to be witnesses to their faith. I think that many Muslims are worried about the future of Christians in that part of the world because they know that Christians can help them to understand modernity and how to reconcile diversity and unity. The Christians have been in the Holy Land without interruption for centuries. They have enjoyed, in different ways, national and international rights. And we cannot neither neglect, as it has been said before, the importance of a solution, of the juridical status of the most significant part of Jerusalem, that is to say, where the main holy places of the three monotheistic religions are, practically the city intramuros. You know that the Holy See is in favor of a special status, internationally guaranteed, in order to preserve the uniqueness and the sacredness of that part of the city. For Christians, Jerusalem has a special significance. First of all, it holds the most precious places where Jesus lived. Secondly, it is the city with an ongoing presence of a Christian community. So for the local Christians, like for the Jews and the Muslims, Jerusalem is not only a holy city, it is their home city where they have a right to continue to live, to pray, and to work. They must be granted and have secured the most fundamental rights: freedom of conscience and freedom of religion, freedom of movement, civic and historical rights, education, health, possession of their own institution, seminaries, university, monasteries, and so on. Of course, all these has to be recognized not only for Christians, but also for all the inhabitants of the Holy Land. The three monotheistic religions, we have said yesterday, recognize Abraham as their father. In spite of the fact that his heritage gives room to different interpretations, we can find a common message. To follow Abraham means not to look back, but toward the future. Jews, Christians, and Muslims must be heralds of hope. To follow Abraham means also to be attentive to the foreigner. Remember the episode of the Tree of Mamre. To follow Abraham means never choosing to take the path that is a dead end, but to be always a pilgrim. Christians in the Holy Land do not pretend to be by themselves, to rule or to impose, but just to blossom where they have been planted by God. and make their fellow citizens understand that every religion is an invitation to go along without idols, to be welcoming to newness, and to be always capable of solidarity. So we must give them the tools of survival: decent education, decent housing, and of course, a job. Since Cain and Abel, exclusivism and the desire for security has always been in the heart of man. But history, like religions, teach us that there is only one future, a shared future. What is important is not to stop, but rather to continue our dialogue, our pilgrimage toward the truth, with the conviction that it is not because things are difficult that we do not dare. It is because we do not dare that they are difficult. You will have recognized a quotation from the Roman philosopher Seneca. So let us follow his advice. Let us dare. Thank you.
Your Eminence, thank you very much indeed for a most penetrating and illuminating reflection. Two things which struck me as I listened. One was that phrase, a minority that matters. We spoke yesterday about the very double-edged idea of minority, which can so easily suggest, it's becoming clearer and clearer in this conference, it can so easily suggest, as it were, a minority in the sense of those who have lost a vote or who have lost a conflict. The majority wins, the minority loses. And that is exactly what we want to counter here. We're talking about not a minority tolerated as losers in a society of victors. We're talking about an element in the community which contributes in many ways disproportionately to the health of that wider community while retaining its own integrity. And I think the Cardinal has reminded us of exactly how that works in the context of Israel and Palestine. But also I was taken with the reminder that if we speak of the Abrahamic religions, we do well to remember the hospitality of Abraham, the great icon of the angels being entertained by Abraham under the oaks of Mamre, an icon which we have in our chapel downstairs, as some of you will have seen, is of course known in Greek as the icon of the philoxenia, literally the love of the stranger. Hospitality is not simply a kind of indifferent opening of the door and leaving a little bit of food somewhere around on the table. It is an act of love and embrace, an act of welcome. And for the Abrahamic religions to be truly Abrahamic must suggest that active, involved hospitality.